The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardin. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Good evening, my friends. It is the weekend, Saturday night. Time to talk money. That's what the show's all about. I am Wolfgang Klein, Jack Hartle, my right-hand man, my wing man. Such a good fella you are, Jack. Got us one guest this evening, and it's going to be a good show. I'm looking forward to it. Drummond Brodeur. He's a Senior Vice President, Portfolio Manager, and Global Strategist with CI. CI is a large, successful Canadian fund company. They hire some of the finest minds to help manage money. Mr. Brodeur has been in the industry since 1989. He's been with CI since 2007. Great background focusing on China, the Pacific Basin. And prior to CI, he has experience overseeing international portfolios at KBSH Capital Management, senior analyst with the Caisse de dépôt, the largest asset manager in Quebec, and being a portfolio manager at Bankers Trust in Australia. I just love the global resume you have there, Drummond. You should be very proud of that. Good evening, my friend, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, Wolfgang, Jack, great to be back. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, being a expert in the Chinese market, Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times. Do you not agree 2022 is making for yet another interesting investment year? And with that, how do you attack it? How do you strategically navigate such a year when managing money? And again, just think about the average, upwardly mobile Torontonian, if you will, as you're answering these questions, my friend.
Yeah, no, look, may you live in interesting times is absolutely correct. It's what a year has been. It was always going to be an interesting year coming into 2022. As I say, that was before we sort of then launched a war and over in the Ukraine. So, as I say, we were, when you look at the world today, it's just a gloomy, gloomy outlook. It's depressing to watch the news. I mean, we went from a pandemic. We were just trying to get out of that, reopen that. And then, as I say, you launch a war right in Europe and in parts that we never thought we would see again. Or at least in our time, inflation hitting all-time highs, interest rates rising. And then to top it off, all those upwardly mobile Torontonians were out shoveling snow in the middle of April. It's just depressing.
You're taking it to grassroots level, man. That's good. Let's start with commodities. Tecumenco, I'm going to get granular here. Large copper, zinc, coal producer in Western Canada. Stock looks like it's had a triple top. We're trimming positions in that. So here we're actually selling against the trend because the trend is showing a lot of strength in all commodities. But these cyclical names, we have to remind ourselves, are just that. They are cyclical. So the burning question is, do commodities continue to run? Are we in a long stage, otherwise known as a secular bull market in commodities that could, in fact, run for a 10 to 15 year period based on global rethinking of supply chain management and securing longer term secure sources of supplies and resources?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. And that's, I think there's an element of both to that. Wolfgang, I think we've definitely, as I say, that's you pick the one bright spot in equity markets to date, which has always been the commodity space, although the rest have not been that bad, which we'll get around to. And so the commodities have had a great run. And in the short term, as you say, these things never move in us in one direction. It's particularly cyclical. It's two steps forward, one step back. But I do think there is a bit of secular story in some areas of the market, and that includes even in the energy space, where they say energy security starts to become more of an issue, and that's layered on top of about a decade of underinvestment in energy from the belief that we're getting off energy, we're moving to a post-carbon society, and it just can't happen that quickly. But it had led to sort of significant underinvestment for a long time. So even before the war in the Ukraine, we were looking at sort of very tight energy markets coming up, which would take quite some time to get off. And the same with some of the industrial metals. That the move to renewables, to electrification of the fleet, etc. It is happening. It just plays out over decades, not years. And so it's also, though, very, very commodity intensive. And you mentioned copper in there. So there's a number of copper and lithium, a number of areas that demand is just going to be very, very robust over the coming decade. And that's where that more of that secular demand comes from. But these things will, in the short term, get ahead of themselves, as they say. So taking some profits, looking for pullbacks. It does make sense, and some of these just have been a pretty good moonshot in the past year or so.
The energy services sector again underinvested in, unloved for the last 10 years. Again, it looks like it's getting some attraction. Schlumberger going to be reporting results at the close this evening. Again, a name that we've been nibbling into. Again, it's all about energy independence, and again, more of it therefore being extracted in the Western world. How do you think that will play out for the next 3 to 5 years?
I think that we're going to continue to see, as I say, right now, energy prices, you may come off the boil, oil price up at $100, north of $100. But most equity prices are sort of factoring in more something in the $60, $70 range, according to my energy guys. And we still see that sort of tight supply dynamic. And we've still seen a very, there's still a reluctance to increase supply, and even on the short cycle stuff in the Permian, the shale space is which can be turned on quicker. There's still this sort of capital discipline from a lot of the producers, even as prices have spiked up as much as they have. So supply has been sort of very slowly sort of reacting to these elevated prices. And part of the reason as well, quite frankly, on the services side, is trying to get labor, trying to get the other components one needs to ramp up activity is incredibly challenging. So it's leading them to sort of drag their feet, which means the supply response is deferred and drayed out, which means higher prices, or it supports that sort of those higher prices for a little bit longer than has been in the past. But don't kid yourself in terms of the energy space. I mean, capital discipline and respecting shareholders, that's all good and dandy until, the dam breaks and they're back to cowboys and saying, let's go drilling again. So it's a cycle that we've all seen play out over a multitude of cycles, and I expect it will play out again. But I do think we've got, we've had many years of underinvestment in the long-term stuff. And now even the short cycle stuff has been slow to respond. So it looks pretty good. Now the short term question is what happens with the Russia supply? Are we going to be taking a million barrels a day of supply off, or is it going to be four? That's a tough question. If it's in the million barrels a day range, we're going to be able to sort of replace that from other sources, other areas, but there's just not spare capacity if we are going to knock out 4 million barrels a day out of Russia. That will cause a much more elevated, but with the upside that you see in some forecasts that are saying, $185, $200 oil prices, etc., is really contingent on that, knocking out Russia and not even that stuff finding backdoor ways back into the market.
Yeah, I've always thought it would find a backdoor way into the market. Again, time will tell. Again, I just want to repeat something that you said. But if perchance that the world consumes 4 million barrels less of Russian crude could spike to up to $200 a barrel. Wow.
Let me put that caveat. That was just the latest headline I saw going through in my inbox recently today. And on these upsides, people always fall over themselves to get the highest number. So that is not a forecast I'm making. those are just the sort of the numbers you're starting to see out there, which is you always do get that sort of frenzy, feeding frenzy on it. So
duly noted, Drummond, duly noted. Manias are fascinating to watch. World's got to eat. World's running out of this. World's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. And Jack's an economist, and he understands the power of a substitute and the power of herd mentality at the same time. We are speaking with Drummond Brodeur. He is a senior vice president, global strategist with CI Funds. It's a delight to have him on the show for its duration this evening. Jack, I just want to throw it to you for a quick sec. What's going through your mind as we're speaking here with Drummond? Give us a quick question before we hit the break, and we'll get back to you on the flip side.
Just getting back to the energy space, Wolf. It looks like OPEC, we talked about it yesterday in the office, OPEC is back in charge of supply. Those shale producers aren't producing, like we said, and it's really pinching those Canadians at the pump. And it's not just with at the pump, it's because our Canadian dollar typically would be much stronger in a strong energy environment, and it's being held back by the Ukraine war. So maybe we can talk to Drummond after that.
Let's do that. Drummond, we're going to take a quick break and get right back to the Q&A fireside chat with a very smart man. Friends, he wants to tune into this type of stuff. This is what pros do on a 9-to-5 basis. We work overtime, Jack and I. Hi-Fi Radio, 640 Toronto, each and every Saturday night. Any questions for Jack or I, wolfgangkline.com. Going to take a quick break and get right back with Drummond Brodeur.
Let's take a break. Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Come and listen to my story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold. Texas tea. Well, the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. The kinfolk said, Jed, move away from there. Said, California is a place you ought to be. So they loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly Hills, that is, swimming pools, movie stars. The Beverly Hillbilly.
That'd be a nice place to hang out. Eh? You wouldn't be shoveling snow. A little picking on a Saturday night. $200 a barrel crude. It is possible. I paid $2.17 at the pump for some premium just the other day. $2.17. Oh, well, first world problem that I do have. Many of them, I must say, and I'm blessed to have first world problems indeed. Blessed, blessed, blessed. We are all blessed. Hey, alternative, be in the Ukraine, flee the country. What's safe? What's a safe asset when you're fleeing a country? Your home has been demolished. Your car has been destroyed. Your family is in ruins. What is safe? You're going to take your bars of gold? Perhaps some. But the irony is, you know, if you own shares in oil stocks, if you owned shares in bank stocks, those shares would still be registered to you no matter where you had to flee to. You would have wealth. The stock market's risky, is it? It's got some advantages too, my friends. That's what this show is all about. Viewing the world from a different lens. Very important. Drummond Brodeur. Brodeur. I can't get your last name. I had it. Brodeur. There we go. Drummond Brodeur. Famous hockey player. Famous goalie as well. Martin Brodeur. Correct? Jack?
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, there you go. Drummond's a global strategist. It's just a delight to have such a big brain with a global view on money. And again, something we're going to pivot to from, we had a discussion about oil and the dislocations and challenges around the commodity, hence the opportunity for investors who certainly purchased it correctly, which is early, not during such a sharp rise, but in advance of. But let's talk about something else that has been going down for 40 years. Going down for 40 years. That'll be the next song we play, a little Springsteen for you, Jack, going down. 20 years, 40 years. Interest rates have gone down for 40 years. That trend is over. Over. I said over. Hit bottom. Interest rates are now on the rise. The question, and this is the question, because this matters more than anything else that we talk about on the show, is interest rates. Why? Because it's the cost of money. You have to always remind yourself, my friends, it's the cost of money. If money is cheap, which it has been, prices rise. Look no further than your neighbor's house or the house across the street. Why did that house rise? Because it's a beautiful house. Probably a piece of you know what. So many million-dollar homes in Toronto are crap. Why do they go up to $1 million? Because of interest rates. So the question is, what is going to happen to asset prices if interest rates rise significantly? The question we have to ask ourselves is, how much do we think rates are going to rise? They already have risen a lot. You may not notice it yet, but they have off a very low base. Drummond, I'm sure you can give us some great answers as to what is going to happen to rates and the central banks around the world.
Yep. And I think, as I said, Wolfgang, I think that's the question. And I think that is what's been driving markets more than the headline news of pandemics, wars, et cetera. It's been interest rate. It's been the Fed. What we've done in the course of the past sort of 3-4 months is we've repriced the Fed. We have repriced the trajectory for interest rates. And I say the Fed, the U.S., but we've done the same here in Canada. We've done the same over in Europe. And that has been what has been driving markets more than anything else, the volatility that we have seen. And as you said, after 40 years, we've had one of the most rapid reprice, like 40 years declining interest rates, this jump off zero. Let's face it, we got them pretty darn low, negative in Europe. But this sort of jump up over the course of the past 3 months where we've now got the 10-year back up to 2.9, sort of punching up against 3% again, has been one of the biggest and fastest repricing of the rate structure that we've ever seen. And it's why, I'd say, bonds had a really, bonds underperformed equities in the first quarter, even as bad as people felt equities were. Bonds were no safe haven because it was driven by rising rates. But then the question is, how far are they going to go? And I think that's a key question. And they can't go a whole lot further. If we want to have, it took 40 years to get down to zero. You can't turn around and push interest rates up that fast because we've adapted. The economy's adapted to these low rates. So the pace that they can rise is going to be limited by the impact. And so I would say right now we've already repriced central banks getting interest rates back to neutral. And so that excessive monetary policy, when they took overnight rates down to zero during the pandemic, we don't need it anymore. The economy is booming. You know, unemployment is booming. Inflation is booming. Or not unemployment, but employment is booming. We don't need that support anymore. And so, central banks are way behind the curve we just started the rate increase. They got to get back to neutral ASAP. And neutral is that level where it's in monetary policy framework that says, monetary policy, level of interest rates is not providing any stimulus to the economy, nor is it really being a headwind. It's just that neutral rate where the economy can sort of grow at a sustainable pace. It's a bit like a unicorn. Okay, we know the neutral rate exists, but no one's ever seen it. You can't actually see it. You kind of got to feel your way towards it. Most central bankers believe the neutral rate is somewhere around 2 to 2.5% on the overnight rate, and they're right now they're at sort of 50 basis points. So we have another 200 plus basis points to go at the short end. But interestingly, the curve has already priced that in. So when I look at the 10-year rate and other rates, I think we've already done most of the damage in the bond market for central banks that have to get back to neutral.
Well, the U.S. 30-year fixed, guys, is at 5%. Tony Dwyer, our chief strategist, has been talking about that. I think it's at 5%, correct? The 30-year U.S. fixed mortgage.
You're talking about mortgages there, the 30-year mortgage in the U.S.
Correct. Which, again, that's my point. The market has already adjusted to the rising rates. So the market's already anticipated rates rising, is my point. The mortgage market has followed suit, correct?
Yeah. That is correct. And that five-year mortgage rate, that's this is an important issue, Wolfgang, and this is an important issue for Canada, because in the U.S., that five-year, 30-year mortgage, like they're all 30-year fixed-rate mortgages. So you had rates down. They've doubled. You've boomed housing markets. Rates have gone up. Refi market's dead in the U.S. But if you have a 30-year fixed mortgage, when interest rates go up, your payments don't go up. So you hurt the new housing market, you hurt the refi market. So that slows activity, which is what you have to do to curtail inflation. That's what they're trying to do. But you don't kill household balance sheets with existing mortgages. In Canada, as rates go up, we're a variable or maybe a five-year fixed. The impact to Canadian households through the mortgage market is just going to be that much faster and bite that much quicker than it is the U.S. And that's why I say rates can only go so far before they start to bite into slowing down the economy and then you're killing off inflation or tipping over in a recession. So rates have a limit to how high they can go before they sort of jam the brakes onto the economy. And right now, central banks are not trying to tip us into a recession. They're cognizant of what they're doing, but you have to be aware of interest rates is that tool that will be the headwind to slow down the economy going forward. And in Canada, the mortgage market is just that much more sensitive to those rate increases.
You know, again, you bring up a very valid point that sort of slipped my gray matter in that, yes, in the United States, if you have signed up for a 30-year mortgage, it is a 30-year mortgage. It does not renew every 5 or 2 years, let alone variable rate. Here in Canada, what's the longest term we can get on a mortgage in Canada? Is it 7 years?
I think you can stretch out to 7 years. I think five is kind of the
five is the norm. Yeah. Every 5 years, if rates go up, when your mortgage comes for renewal, you will be paying a higher rate. And again, Jack, you had the statistic within the last 5 years, I believe 75% of new mortgage applications were variable rate. And of course, if that is the case, they'll be most susceptible. I'm sorry, Jack?
It used to be more people were taking on fixed mortgages, but with rates being so low on the short end, as Drummond referenced, basically almost, it wasn't free, but pretty close. People were taking the, I'm going to call it free money, 1.5% floating rate mortgages, not locking them in and extending themselves, taking on as much credit as they could. And these central banks, Wolf and Drummond, when they raise rates, they have two tools. They can raise or lower interest rates, or they can buy bonds, and they're very blunt tools. So when they go out and do it, they affect asset prices dramatically. And as Drummond's talking about, I think it'll affect the Canadian market more than the U.S. But just generally speaking, if there's not refinance going on in the U.S., it's just like the home credit lines in Canada. That's people were using their houses as bank machines to go out and buy discretionary items, which is obviously not the intent of them. But when credit is available, when liquidity is available, that's what people do. Central banks now are taking liquidity out of the market. So you have to look at how is it going to affect various asset classes.
And I already see. Well, I want to stick with the bond market for a second. Drummond, Martin Roberge is one of our chief strategists. He's fantastic. And if, I'm sure you've spent some time just seeing his work before. And a couple of weeks ago, he said, well, if you may want to start to look at the bond market as a bit of an entry point here, because it's been pretty crushed. And I said, below 3%, a bond does not interest me, especially with inflation running 6%. I'm still losing money. But again, with the rapid increase of interest rates, when interest rates go up, friends at home, bonds go down. I repeat, if interest rates rise, bonds fall in value. And when interest rates fall, bonds go up in value. A bond is an asset class that should move just like your home. In other words, rates go up, the asset should fall. Rates go down, the asset should rise. But I'm looking at an instrument, gentlemen and ladies, called the TLT. It's the U.S. 20-year Treasury ETF, and it can be traded. It's a very liquid instrument. And the ETF was trading at $180 2 years ago. Today it's trading at $120. This is a $60 or what, a 25, 30% haircut on a government bond portfolio. It's unbelievable. Again, the time to buy oil is when they're giving it away, when it was zero. And oil was zero during the pandemic. I repeat, oil was free during the pandemic, and oil stocks were representing that type of value. Most people weren't out there buying oil, but they should have been. Hindsight, of course, is as 2020 as it can be. But here I present, again, a perhaps interesting technical chart, Drummond, is that on the TLT, the chart looks very compelling to me. What are your thoughts? Would you be nibbling into some bonds in here? If you underweight bonds and are looking for ballast, because again, the bond market hasn't provided ballast recently, but generally speaking, academically speaking, bonds provide ballast, security to a portfolio. So you said yes. I can ask you a question again. Would you be buying the government bond market in here? And if so, what part of the curve would you buy?
Yeah, so right now I am not scared to buy government bonds. I think they represent fair value. And so I think in the next downturn, they're going to have you reloaded that ability for a bond to provide some ballast or protection in a portfolio in the next downturn. I am still like you at 3%. I think rates are still going up. So I don't think they are the best relative value. I think equities will outperform at this stage. But at, you know, at 1.5%, they were way, you know, they were way below fair value. They didn't look like they made sense for bonds, too expensive or rates too low. Today at 3%, I'm comfortable putting in. I don't think I'll lose money on bonds from this stage forward. And so, yeah, nibbling away, depending on how what percentage they're in your portfolio right now, I am comfortable doing that.
Jack, we're going to talk about that off on air, because that just may be another move we have to make. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the very exciting market of bonds, not James. Stand by at 640 in Toronto.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
The bond market, my friends. Bonds, bonds, bonds. Yes, they're pieces of debt. You are lending an institution or an individual or a company money. You can lend to the government. You can lend to big companies like Coca-Cola. And you can lend to the banks. You can get involved in the private mortgage market. Speaking of which, Jack, see, I speak out loud. I think out loud. I pop up a little question. We have not heard very much about the shadow banking market or the secondary mortgage market. Gentlemen, please, Ichi, give me 30 seconds on your quick opinion on that gray area of lending. What's happened to it in the last 6 months with rates on the uptick? We'll start with Jack.
Sure. I would say, Wolf, people that are refinancing their banks or refinancing their mortgage with traditional banks, they should be able to refinance. I don't expect it to be a problem. But, you know, if people are stretching themselves a little too thin, they're going to have to go to alternative lenders. And those alternative lenders, you know, if banks are lending on a 5-year at 4%, depending on your credit rating, they're going to be, those rates will be rising as well.
Drummond? Well, what's your opinion on that market? Because I used to hear a lot about it. People say, you know, well, if I'm not buying stocks, my lawyer can get me involved in these private mortgages. They pay 8%. They're first rated. I'm first in line. And then all of a sudden, you don't hear when the defaults kick in.
Yeah, no. Look, that was a huge part of the last cycle, obviously, as we are all aware of. It hasn't been back to anywhere close to the same degree of egregiousness that we had back then. I don't follow it closely. I mean, our credit guys look at it. Broad credit markets overall are very healthy, functioning. There's plenty of demand, plenty of supply. So we're not hearing any stress points anywhere.
Good.
And even I was looking at, now this is U.S. data I was looking at, but even the mortgage market, a lot of the mortgage origination has been in more higher quality borrowers, in fact, as opposed to the low quality side. So there's been a big uptick in terms of the percentage of mortgages going to better credits, if you will. Now that's just the U.S. data, but it probably ties into with this whole notion of in the pandemic, people moving out to the suburbs or buying other houses elsewhere. It's been a different animal than a traditional cycle has been. And I think that's fed through into part of the mortgage stats that we've seen. Once again, I'm basing that off U.S. data I've seen.
When you're talking about interest rates, you have to, of course, first and foremost, look at inflation and have some kind of an opinion as to what inflation is going to be doing over the near to long term. So I ask you, Drummond, with inflation going from zero to deflationary speak 3-4 years ago, deflationary talk 4 years ago, to this hyper historic inflation that we're now all faced with, is the inflation of 6%+ permanent?
Is it temporary? What's the new world order when we're speaking about rising prices?
It's temporary. It will be rolling over. Two comments I'd make is that anyone, like usually in economic systems, we think of terms of equilibria when a system is in balance. And there's nothing in balance about our system today. We're just basically staggering from one exogenous shock to the next one. You know, pandemic, massive fiscal monetary stimulus, trying to reopen, having a war in there. Like this is like a punch drunk sort of boxer staggering, you know, from one bout to the next. So it's a very dislocated system, which is why no one was really, you know, calling 8% inflation 6 months ago or these interest rates. So we have to have a high degree of recognition that there's a huge degree of uncertainty. I've been telling people recognize with any forecast, the first thing you should recognize with your forecast is it's wrong. and then start from there just because we can't, there's just way too many moving parts of just, you know, unprecedented nature and size to sort of have any degree of confidence how they're going to shake out. But what we do know on the inflation side is we've had this very robust demand crashing into very constrained supply. And that, whether you look at the goods sector through the pandemic, where you had all this sort of basic fiscal stimulus, mailing checks out to people. So people were spending like crazy because they had tons of money. You've had household balance sheets. The household are fantastic because of all that fiscal stimulus. And so that supported this huge spurge in spending on goods because you couldn't spend on services. At the same time, supply chains factories were shutting down. So that was the initial driver of that inflationary boost. And that is ebbing. First of all, the fiscal stimulus has stopped. That stopped last year. So that demand aspect will be fading. And supply chains will be getting back on their feet, even if there's a few setbacks along the way. So you will start to see that goods inflation rolling over, and we've started to see that in the data as well. But now it's the services side. We're shifting to services spending and going out to restaurants and travel, and they can't hire people. The labor market's tight, so you still have the services inflation aspect of the reopening playing out, but that's also going to start sort of easing off as that pent-up demand rolls over as we go through the year. And as labor markets open up, feel more comfortable, you start to see people coming back to the job market. And then, of course, the war just, you know, exacerbated everything by adding the energy equation into that and the food equation into that. So we will have more elevated service inflation. Goods inflation is rolling over. Base effects are falling out. When you look at one-year numbers, okay, for the April inflation data, it's going to be what happened in April, but also what did we drop off from a year ago. And actually, a year ago was some of the highest inflation monthly prints. So you're going to see base effects rolling off as year ago inflation doesn't repeat itself. So we've probably peaked in inflation, but it's going to stay more elevated than previously anticipated for all the above mentioned reasons. But it will still be, and this is where knowing where the Fed action, what central banks are going to do, we really got to fast forward and say, what does the picture look like in December at year end as opposed to today? And that's where that lack of clarity in our crystal balls to knowing just how fast inflation is going to roll over or not is a key parameter to pay attention to.
Brilliant speak, Drummond, truly. Look, we got to take one more break and get back to you. The question I want you to ponder between now and the break, if you don't mind, is listening to the market itself. And I said the market, there's multiple markets that we all follow. But the one that's most impressive to me, I'd have to say, is the North American equity markets. As crisis to crisis, we've been bounced through for the last number of years. It's one crisis after the other. Yet the market, resilient like I've never seen before. I want you to comment on that when we get back. We're going to take a quick break. It's 6:40 in Toronto, Hi-Fi Radio. I'm Wolfgang Klein. Jack Hartle, my partner. Any questions, anytime, wolfgangklein.com. Stay tuned.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 6:40 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Welcome back, my friends.
trying to dance to the music, stay on trend, respect the markets, respect the direction, yet have an opinion and be steadfast in that opinion. I'm sort of speaking out of both sides of my mouth. And what I mean by that is own good companies. Try, true, and test it. You can sleep better at night. But at the same time, respect what's going on around you. You know, an oil stock can be a great company, but this could be a bad period in time to own it. The last 10 years have been a terrible time to own Suncor or CNQ, two excellent businesses. Had you held them through thick and thin, probably work out okay, but if you want to dance to the music, they're cyclical. Perhaps take a break from the dance floor and come back to that floor when your feet are a little bit rested, shall I say. So here we are full circle, and Drummond Brodeur is with us. My friend, please carry on from where we left off.
Yep. Looking at the equity market, I think this is full circle for this talk. We're talking about repricing the Fed as a theme in terms of the bond market. And that's what we've played out over the course of the past quarter in the equity markets as well. Obviously, as interest rates go up, that's a headwind for equity markets. You know, the interest rate is the discount rate that you would discount your future cash flows back at. So higher interest rates would generally mean lower valuations. Keep in mind, we came into the year on record highs. That was a time to be a little bit more cautious with the S&P around 4,800. But the market has held up remarkably well as we've gone through this repricing of the Fed. Yeah, it's off 5 to 10%. If you dig down, the really speculative stuff has been decimated. There's a lot of stuff that's down 50, 60, 70%, as you would expect, because that stuff was crazy. But going back to good, solid companies, strong cash flow, those that return cash flow, you know, cash flow to shareholders, doing reasonably well. And the reason for that is that people who were repricing the Fed, the Fed's raising interest rates because the economy is doing well. It is growing. We're one of the most robust economic growth rates we've seen in our careers. I mean, the U.S. grew 5.7% last year. It's slowing for a bunch of reasons, but it is still growing way above potential. And even as people are taking growth estimates down due to higher inflation and other shocks, instead of growing to 4%, maybe it'll grow at 3%. But the growth potential of the U.S. is 2%, so it's still growing way above its normal growth path. Inflation is, you know, one person's inflation is another person's price increase. So companies that have power and the ability to sort of put their prices up, that causes inflation, but it's very supportive of margin growth. And so when you look at the S&P 500, earnings estimates have continued to rise for 2022 as we've gone through this year. And that's been the secret to the market really holding up, is that earnings are continuing to come through. And so the market, in the first quarter, earnings were estimates were up about 5%, and the market was down 5%. So the market is getting cheaper, about 10% cheaper than it was, which makes sense given the higher interest rates. But we're repricing that Fed while earnings still remain robust, and that's putting that floor underneath U.S. equities. And as long as earnings continue to come through, that's going to continue to sort of support. As I say, I expect that 2022 will be a grinding sideways year as you adapt to higher interest rates, and that's what we get. But it's not all bearish, but they say stronger earnings ultimately are the driver, the fundamental driver for why you want to own equities. And if we grind sideways from here, equities outperform, but curb your enthusiasm. It's going to be modest gains with lots of bumps along the way, and that's what we've seen so far.
Curb your enthusiasm from an individual. We're going to call him Drummond Downer at the Open. You were like a Debbie Downer at the Open, quite negative. But yeah, you're moderating. But look, it makes sense. It's been a grind of a year. And again, we're all coming off of, you know, 2-3 solid years in equity returns, remarkably so. So you have to expect some kind of a pause. Do you pay a lot of attention, by the way, Drummond, to the presidential cycle? The third year of the presidential term tends to be the strongest equity year. And the second year of the term, like clockwork, tends to be the weakest of the four years. Coming up into the midterms in November, the market is poised perhaps to have a pivot in the right direction. So my guess is we're going to probably grind for another 3-4 months, 5 months, and late fall perhaps have ourselves a decent rally. What's your thoughts on the short-term action of the market?
completely consistent with that view. This grinding sideways and higher as you adapt to higher prices, I think we the market ends up higher from here. So, you know, the gloominess in the market, I think, is overdone. I'm actually quite optimistic. The Curb Your Enthusiasm was that we weren't going to see your massive double-digit returns of the past couple of years. It's going to be more modest returns, but equities still in that environment tend to give a positive return because we're still in that mid-cycle stage, which is very favorable backdrop for corporate earnings going forward. And I don't see any sign of a recession in the next 12 months. So that is supportive. To your point, once we've digested these rate increases and people say, hey, the Fed's job is done, that allows the markets to form that base to move higher from there.
I'll ask you, and we don't have a lot of time, Drummond, but I got more questions than time for you. Canada over America, and your opinion on bank stocks. So country and bank stocks.
Yeah, I like both. So, I mean, if we can't outperform once a decade in Canada, come on. We got to give it. When oil prices are
100. I love that. That's good. No, you're right. We've lagged for so long. It's our day. We outperformed last year modestly, I believe, and perhaps this year as well, correct? Makes sense.
Yeah, so give us a bit of a stage of the cycle. But then we get down to the issue, to your point, that a lot of our industries are more cyclical. And we don't have some of those real structural growth industries that are in the U.S. So you're going to want that sort of longer term structural growth compounders that you can find in the U.S., which are getting repriced as we speak. But that's setting them up for pretty attractive entry points.
Drummond Brodeur, Senior Vice President, Portfolio Manager, and Global Strategist with CI. I cannot thank you enough for spending this evening with us. It's been a delight. My son's off at Western. Jack's from Western. Western, you produce good people. Thank you. Have a great weekend, Drummond. Jack, excellent job bringing on your partner there from school. It's a real pleasure. And I want to wish everyone a safe weekend. Pray for Ukraine and a quick end to the conflict. It's what the world needs. God bless you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.